The final meeting of the Subcommittee on Child Care Access and Affordability will come to order, and there is a quorum present. Representative Cagle, do I? Okay. Representative Flanagan, do I have a motion to approve the minutes from February 22nd?
So moved.
Thank you. Representative Flanagan moves approval of the minutes from February 22nd. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes from February 22nd are approved. The first bill up we have for consideration is House File 1583. Representative Peterson moves the bill be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We do have the bill before us. Representative Peterson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The bill before you, House File 1583, is a great bill that will help Minnesota working families. These are families that are on the basic sliding fee child care program, and it is their lifeline to quality care for their children. It's intended to help the very low or to very modest income families cover part of the cost of their child care. And because the demand often outpaces the funding, counties across the state have been forced to create waiting lists. In short, it's certainly been true of my county in Dakota, but it also includes counties as diverse as Cook, Yellow Medicine, and Olmsted. It makes some administrative changes that helps these working families secure and sustain work. And if we can get families off the wait list and their kids into care, we can assure that they continue climbing the ladder of poverty and into a world of self-sufficiency and self-reliance. So as a quick summary, it increases the number of working poor families who can get to work by changing the priorities of the basic sliding fee waiting list. It helps decrease the size of the waiting list and get more families child care. It takes the working poor and places them first on the list of the five priority areas. And no family would be hurt under this bill, so it's quite the opposite. Families transitioning off of MFIP would not lose the help they need to stay employed. But other working, low-income families would have more rapid access to this program. So I just want to emphasize that this focuses on the basic sliding fee wait list, lower-income people who want to work and stay off of public assistance. And as I mentioned, if we can keep these families working, we can help them out of poverty and keep their children in high-quality child care settings. And Madam Chair, I have the Director of Employment and Economic Assistance Department for Dakota County, Ms. Marty Fishbach, and she is here to give a county perspective on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Ms. Fishbach, please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Marty Fishbach, Director of Employment and Economic Assistance in Dakota County. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representatives. Child care assistance is seen as, if not the most critical, one of two most critical public investments in a person's path to self-sufficiency. In addition to support for this self-sufficiency, it also supports employers having stable workforce, and it supports child care providers. It helps. It also, very importantly, helps children thrive, promoting school readiness. When we see people struggling to become self-sufficient, we see a huge difference between those who are getting child care and those who are not. Child care is a foundational cornerstone of services needed with the high cost is becoming more and more important with the high cost of child care. These proposed changes would mean faster access to stable care for young children, assistance so more low-income parents, including veterans, can take and retain a job, and assurance to more child care providers that bills will get paid, keeping them in business as well. Families on the basic sliding fee wait list are lower-income people, as Representative Peterson mentioned, and they want to work and they want to stay off public assistance. As of December 2016, there were over 5,000 families waiting for basic sliding fee child care around the state. In many counties, the wait for this program is over 2 years. Provisions for this bill prevent any families from losing service while helping low-income families get help faster. And just to give you an example, in Dakota County of what we see, about 2 to 3 times a week we get someone screaming in for child care, and they have either lost their job because they could not keep stable child care, they have quit their job because they couldn't keep stable child care, or they're reducing their hours in order to try to meet the eligibility criteria for MFIP where child care is included. So we're seeing that on a weekly basis. And in the summer, we actually see that more often because the kids are out of school. Some counties have done surveys which reveal families on the basic stipend fee waiting list try to glue together child care and with various friends and relatives, and then that falls through, and too frequently they come back on MFIP. Counties ask for your support in this bill to allow more parents to seek and retain stable employment by reducing the wait and to help pay for the cost of stable care for their children. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fishbach. Besides anybody having the Nickelback song in our head now, are there any questions from members? All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. And Representative Peterson, is there any further discussion to your bill?
It's a great bill.
All right. Well, thank you for presenting. And hearing none, Representative Peterson will renew her motion that House File 1583 be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and a subcommittee report on House File 1583 will be prepared for the full committee. Next up, we have Representative Flanagan. And she has a bill up for consideration, which is our favorite House File Quad X. Pending introduction to the Health and Human Services Reform Committee, Representative Flanagan moves the bill be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We do have the bill before us, Representative Flanagan, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would wonder if this is the first time that Nickelback has been referenced in a hearing at the Minnesota Legislature. No, I heard a no from the Representative Albright, who knows Nickelback.
I've gone to their concert too, Vice Mayor Peterson, twice. I got a date out of one of them, though.
This is a really fun hearing. Wonderful. Members of the committee, Madam Chair, House File Quad X provides a grant of $140,000 to Women Venture to develop a child care business template. So this would include a replicable training program, trainer's manual, and related training materials to help new and existing child care business owners start and run profitable, sustainable businesses. The trainer's manual and training materials will be provided free of charge to the general public and to other organizations throughout the state who want to offer similar training programs. During the grant period, Women Venture will also deliver an 8-week training program to approximately 100 entrepreneurs who either want to start or already operate child care businesses. And the reason I'm bringing this bill forward is because as we were traveling throughout the state as the Child Care Task Force, we heard this repeatedly, that there's clearly a need for additional child care, but also for support in starting child care, either in-home or center-based care. And this bill helps to support those efforts. And we do have someone here, Elaine Wyatt from Women Venture, to testify to this bill.
Thank you, Representative Flanagan. Ms. Wyatt, if you will please state your name for the record and who you're with, and you can proceed with your testimony.
Elaine Wyatt, Executive Director of Women Venture. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for giving me a chance to talk today about our work, particularly as it is really focused on helping women start and grow sustainable and profitable businesses. I want to thank Representative Flanagan for really elevating this issue as well. What we see is that we actually meet women who do have very productive businesses in the child care space, and women who come through our doors who really want to start profitable child care businesses but really need a plan. We also meet women, unfortunately, who start without a plan. They aren't aware of us, and they really end up oftentimes in trouble because they don't have a plan for their business. And so when we were thinking about this issue and really talking about the crisis in Minnesota and thinking about what kind of tools do our clients need that they could use to really make sure that their business is going to be successful on the front end. And often it's really a combination of policies, contracts, really creating a true business plan, a financial model that they can test before they go in, so they can test to see how many kids they need at specific ages at different rates, to know where their break-even point is and to have all those tools. We also know with the women that we work with that even though having those tools is a helpful piece, that really the most effective way for women to understand those tools is to actually go through training and have a mentor and get support from each other. So that's a consistent model that we use at Women Venture and really would like to more make that what we like to call the childcare business in a box model for us here in the Twin Cities, but also to be able to create a training model that could be used across state and initiative funds and in other economic development organizations. So that's really what we are proposing.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I need an additional testifier as well.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to ask Yolanda Maxwell, who's the owner of Little Steps Child Care Center in St. Paul, to speak to this bill as well.
Certainly. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Maxwell.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
If you will please state your name and who you are with for the record.
My name is Yolanda Maxwell. I'm the co-owner of Little Steps Child Care Center on Como and Dale, and I'm with Women's Venture.
Okay, and you may proceed with your testimony.
I'm just here to tell my story. I've been doing child care for over 25 years. I started off in home when my child care provider got sick and I didn't feel comfortable with taking my children other places. So I started daycare and I did it for free for many years until my husband said something about it. So then I had to stop trying. I worked at New Horizons for a while, a few years. I've always wanted to have my own because I've been watching kids and taking care of children for a long time. So when I decided to open up a child care center, I just thought that I needed to fill out the application and find me a place and then I can go. But that wasn't the case. I didn't have capital. I didn't know that if I was coming into a building that was not already a child care center, that I had to hire an architect, which there was an additional $450. Then I had to wait for the city to approve the architect's plans. So it took me a long time to get licensed because of those steps that I didn't know. And then by the time I got a hold of Women's Venture, I had already been like 3 or 4 months behind in my mortgage, and I was getting ready to actually lose my spot. So Women's Ventures came in, and they worked a deal out with my landlord and the lawyers. They helped me come up with the money to get caught up until I got enough kids, and now I'm out of debt as far as that is, and I'm licensed for 31, and I currently have 21 children. So Women's Venture helped me out a lot.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And 25 years in the business, that is amazing. You don't look old enough to be. I've done that for that long. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this is probably for Ms. Wyatt and also for Representative Flanagan. I note on line 1.12 of the bill, you detail data on outcomes and recommendations that would be provided to the governor and various committees. I'm just wondering if you could expound on the type of data that you're collecting. And what the outcomes and recommendations that you hope to provide as the outcome for this program, Madam Chair.
Ms. Wyatt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we are a defunded agency, so we are very used to collecting and reporting on data. Typically, what we will collect is the number of clients that we serve, the number of hours, the jobs created, the businesses launched, and the average wage of the both the business owner and their employees. Those are typical data points that we will report. I would imagine for this grant, we would also report on the creation of the product and the use. We should be able to track the number of downloads from the product and the creation of the training manual as well. So those would be other key deliverables that we would report on.
Thank you, Ms. Wyatt.
I'm sorry, I just have one more question. This is probably, I apologize, I wasn't here for the presentation, but I understand it was very well received. And I understand this is more of the gap funding for the overall initiative. So can you tell me how many startups or how many centers or enterprises you would stand up with the entirety of the funding that would go into this type of program? Is it variable, or do you have a set kind of startup in a box type program where it's a certain amount of funding per student, or how many daycare centers or facilities do you expect to put stand up because of this funding, Madam Chair?
Ms. Wyatt?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would anticipate at this point all of our classes that we run are full all the time. And so I would imagine that we would run concurrent classes of 20. We usually do 40 every 2 months that we would do in the Twin Cities. And I would imagine once the product is available, the challenge would be more around if there are partners or others in the market that are also using the program and what their reporting would be. We'd have to think that through and think how we could report on that or learn more about that, because that would be additive to the program as well.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative Albright?
Just to that point, Ms. Wyatt, I'm just wondering, do you ever have, rather than individuals, have businesses attend your classes to understand how businesses might operate a daycare center?
Ms. Wyatt?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the people that we serve are businesses that are owned by 1 to 2 individuals that may come together that we provide services to. We don't typically provide services to, we provide them to the business owner instead of a management team. And so is that your question is more about a management team versus the individual owners?
Actually, Madam Chair, the question was more to the point of partnering with a business who may need on-site daycare for their employees, and whether or not there is a collaborative intent to this as well that we might encourage.
Ms. Wyatt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that I do believe that that's more a part of the strategy of what we're looking at with the cooperatively owned child care initiative that we're going to talk about a little bit later. That is more of a fit because it's really a purely center-based approach, and we understand that there are parts of the community that need 24-hour care and others that maybe only need second shift care. So I think it fits more into that strategy.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just kind of piggybacking off that, I thought this was really nice to be able to have some opportunities for those second shifts and third shifts, because you really have a difficult time finding care at all. I mean, unless you have a spouse that maybe can cover those other, or a family member to cover those other areas. And so I like that part about it. But I was just curious, you know, you have some requirements in about pay and benefits, but do you have any other requirements for, we do a lot about, talk about education and educating our children in high quality centers. So I'm just kind of wondering what kind of education requirements for staff or curriculum or things of that nature.
Madam Chair,
Representative Flanagan.
I believe that we are, right now we're talking about the child care business training. I believe Representative Peterson's question is to House File 1407. Yep.
All right. Members, are there any other questions for the testifiers? All right. Well, Representative Flanagan, do you have any closing thoughts on Quad 4?
I think it helps to solve some of the child care shortages and problems that we have seen across the state, and I think it's a good bill.
All right. Well, a closing discussion. All right, there we are. So Representative Flanagan renews her motion that pending referral, House File Quad X be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Nine. It has been a long day. And the motion, let's see here. Okay. The motion prevails and the subcommittee report on House File Quad X will be prepared for the full committee. Thank you, Representative Flanagan. Next up, we have for consideration is House File 1407. Representative Flanagan moves the bill be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We have the bill before us. Representative Flanagan, and to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So House File 1407 provides a grant of $225,000 to Women Venture, and this is to establish a two-pilot women-run cooperative child care business in low-income urban areas. Women Venture received a $375,000 grant from the Kellogg Foundation for a three-year pilot program to provide business training, mentoring, technical assistance, and loans to individuals so that they can establish a two-co-op child care business in low-income urban areas. The total project cost is $600,000, leaving a funding gap of $225,000, which House File 1407 will cover. And as we've heard, both in this committee and in other committees, Women Venture is a respected nonprofit in Minnesota that's been doing this work for 40 years. Its mission is to help women achieve economic self-sufficiency by starting and expanding profitable and sustainable small businesses. Women Venture is focused on serving low and moderate income women and women of color. Women of color knows the child care business, having helped women start and grow profitable child care businesses. And I think, you know, the opportunity here in particular in working in partnership with Women Venture is that they know entrepreneurs and they know business. And so often we've heard throughout the state how difficult it is to start child care and in particular centers. And I think as we can provide a model, and my hope is that learning from this co-op model from Women Venture, we can duplicate this throughout the state, and we can have some recommendations from Women Venture in the report that will come out after they have launched these co-ops. So to that, I'd like to invite my testifier, Elaine Wyatt, to speak to the bill.
All right. Well, welcome back to the committee, Ms. Wyatt. Please state your name and who you're affiliated with for the record.
Elaine Wyatt, Executive Director of Women Venture.
All right, to your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I really see this bill as true innovation in the child care space. About 2 years ago, we identified that there was a significant gap in the number of child care slots in our community. And we started really recruiting women as they walked through the door as an opportunity for them to start businesses like this. What we found with some of them is they transitioned onto profitable businesses, but we met women who had long-time experience in the child care space. They went through our classes, 17 weeks, prepared a business plan, but could not convert to entrepreneurship because they didn't have the wealth profile to do so. So we started looking across the country to try to find a model that was a solution for women that we felt really passionately about because they really wanted to be entrepreneurs. And we discovered this model of cooperative ownership. At the same time, Kellogg Foundation, who's working nationally, was really grappling with the same issues that they were seeing across the country. And when we came together and we really talked about the solution, they became very excited about working with us. The proposal that we have has really been truly a collaborative effort. If anyone in the room has worked with Kellogg, there is no other way. And we really came up with a pretty specific plan to roll this out. One of the key elements is really a convening of successful 24-hour child care centers across the country. Kellogg really not only cares about slots, but they care about quality as we do. And so really making sure that we understand how to do that in a more complex environment, really inviting women in to explore the opportunity and then converting them into cohorts that will go through a traditional business planning process. They will create a plan. They will determine that it's profitable. We will help them with capital and launch. We'll mentor them and provide them intensive technical assistance. And along the way, we'll create a model for this to be replicated across the state. So that is really, in essence, the work that we plan on doing. We've just started talking about this in the community, and we have had so much excitement that I'm already talking with staff about doing maybe two or three cohorts concurrently because we have so much interest. And I certainly, if we can, I really would like to do that. And that's something that we've done before when we've done a pilot and had a lot of interest. So that, in essence, is what the work is.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wyatt. This maybe isn't specific to this bill, but just in general, the women that you have helped over the years with their child care business, and I'm so thankful for the work that you have been doing in that area, what is the turnover rate? Has there been a turnover rate?
The women that we work with that actually convert to entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. and typically the women that have higher wealth profiles and have some capital do very well in the child care space, and they don't call us if they're going to not do it. I know you guys have more of that research. We typically get a call if they're in trouble.
Okay. So you don't follow up with them?
Madam Chair, we do keep track of our businesses for 5 years.
Okay.
So that is a part of our practice. But beyond that, we don't keep track of our businesses.
Sure. Thank you, Ms. Wyatt. Do we have any questions from members here? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? Representative Peterson?
Well, I'm still looking for the education piece. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Ms. Wyatt?
You have to go to the chair. That's why I said your name. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. We, as a part of the Kellogg grant, and again, not that we don't care about this, because we really do, it's absolutely required. It is a key component of the grant that the co-ops that we develop are really focused on quality child care. And for them, it's a little bit easier in their knowledge to do that in a first shift space and more challenging in second and particularly third shift. So that's really where they want that deep investigation in the community, both locally and nationally, to look at models to ensure not only the care of the children, but it's also a complex issue with families. So if you're working third shift and you have your child in care, how can we really make sure that the moms are going to be able to be there for their kids when they pick them up? So that's a piece that they really care about, and we want to make sure it is baked into the business model.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Wyatt. Is there any other questions? All right. We have somebody from the audience. All right. You may come down. All right. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and your affiliation.
Elizabeth Bangert, owner and director of Here We Grow, located in Mankato, Minnesota. I respectfully just want to say I like a lot of components of this bill, but as someone from outstate Minnesota, the part that is a little bothersome is that it's centered around such a cities area. First Children's Finance received a grant a while ago that was also distributed amongst areas in the cities. We have Verizon in Mankato. We have a lot of need for second and third shift, too. Which is new to our area as well. So I guess that's really just what I wanted to say is I'm wondering why it's just in one area.
And Representative Flanagan, maybe are you able to answer that?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, the reason that this is specifically focused in the urban community is because of the grant itself from Kellogg and the partnership with Women Venture. That is not to say that I don't believe that there's clearly a need for additional to study co-ops and opportunities throughout the state. My hope is that this bill will help us to do that very thing. And I anticipate that there may be some other folks who will be introducing legislation around co-ops in greater Minnesota as well.
All right. Ms. Wyatt, did you want to add to that?
Madam Chair, I would concur with what Representative Flanagan said. We hear the same issues. We just feel like we really want to create a very strong pilot, a great model that can be replicated.
Okay. So the grant that you received from Kellogg, Ms. Wyatt, was that specific to the urban area?
Madam Chair, it was.
Okay. All right, Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just curious, the author said that the bill would facilitate, when I'm looking at the bill, there's a report generated, so actually the funds and the activity wouldn't generate any opportunities in greater Minnesota. They would generate some sort of a plan and documentation so that sometime in the future, I guess I'm curious with the testimony from the person, from the public, is there something that precludes you from trying one of these pilots and activities outside the metro? Specifically restricting you from doing that?
Ms. Wyatt?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the grant from Kellogg is very specific about urban, but they too really have a passion for the issues facing the rural communities across the country. So they really selected Women Venture because we have a history of being able to create replicatable models. And they have worked with other agencies across the country that could implement the concept but not create a concept that could be replicated. And that's really a very key piece of the charge. And so for the money that's coming from Kellogg, we would not be able to use that for outside of an urban area. But, I think it would be up to the committee to decide if they wanted to direct other funds.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. having the third largest city in the state in my district, I think that is considered an urban area. Mankato probably would be close. I would think maybe Duluth might be an urban area. So is the restriction is not just urban, but it's only the metro counties urban?
Ms. Wyatt?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I honestly would have to clarify that with Kellogg. It really, their focus is definitely on very low-income communities, and I would just have to check in with them to see if that, where they were at with that piece. I just don't know. I can get back to you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Do we have any other questions from members? Anybody from the committee? All right. Representative Flanagan, do you have any closing comments?
Please support this bill.
Okay. All right. Representative Flanagan renews her motion that House File 1407 be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails and a subcommittee report on House File 1407 will be prepared for the full committee. Next up, we have another Representative Flanagan bill. We have for consideration House File 1459, and Representative Flanagan moves the bill be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We have the bill before us, Representative Flanagan, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1459 is an uniform standards and training bill for county licensure. So one of the things that we heard, again, as we traveled across the state, was concerns from child care providers regarding inconsistencies of both corrections, issuing corrections orders, and also interpreting and enforcing administrative rules. So essentially what this bill does is creates a training for county licensors to ensure that everyone is on the same page. This is, again, just speaks to the concerns, the real concerns of lack of uniformity and enforcement, and seems to be a real issue across the state. So what this bill does, again, is just helps to create that training curriculum so that all county licensors have to go through that training before they begin their positions. And again, this is in support of what we've heard from providers throughout the state of just making sure that rules are enforced uniformly across the state.
Thank you, Representative Flanagan. Do we have any testifiers? Anybody that you have? Okay. Please come forward and please state your name for the record. You know the drill.
I do. That's okay. If I can do the drill. Cindy Cunningham, a family child care provider here in St. Paul. I'm only marginally prepared because I haven't had time with the computer because of children. But I am one that has spoken frequently about this issue, so I wanted to make sure I backed it. I look at this multiple times. In Ramsey County, beginning in 2014 into 2015, providers really were able to speak up in the county, and we were able to get the county to look at the training for the licensors for this consistency, and they worked closely with DHS to do this kind of training. We have seen a dynamic difference in the mood, the environment, the partner, not necessarily partnership, but at least the relationship between licensors, because we have a sense that the licensors know and understand the rule as well as we do. We've always been expected to know it. Frequently, we've ended up knowing it better than the licensors do, and that's not a good position to be in. So anyone who does their job should be trained in it. One of the things I've said frequently is Target can't tell Walmart what to do. The state can't dictate what a county does with a county employee for training. And that is where I feel, in my understanding, where we've really run into trouble with the training of the licensors is without this kind of a bill that states this is what is expected of these counties. The counties are not required to have the county licensors trained. So I would strongly recommend that this type of bill and this bill be moved forward.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Do we have any other? And you know the drill as well.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Holly Staple. I'm a licensed family child care provider in St. Michael. I've been a licensed provider for 12 years. And I appreciate the intent of what I believe the intent of this bill is. I have a couple concerns, and I laid it out in my written testimony. I think that this bill could actually lead to more punitive actions against family child care providers, and I personally oppose this bill because, there's House File 1508, I believe, that is a more comprehensive licensor training bill and requires certification for licensors, and I believe that's being heard, the Senate version is being heard on Wednesday. But right now, in 2013, DHS was allotted two full-time equivalents, specifically for licensor training to address the inconsistencies in licensing. And I know I testified on the task force several months ago about that, and I don't believe DHS has come up with them. I think those employees have been allotted different things now. But this is their job, and this does not address provider rights. This does not require licensors to be consistent, and so I have concerns with that, and I think that we need a little more comprehensive bill to address those problems, and I don't want to be throwing more money at it, saying, okay, add more training, when DHS has already been given that money for training already. So, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any questions from members? All right. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify?
Good evening, Madam Chair and the members of the committee. My name is Tracy Stengel, and I'm testifying here. I'm from Mankato, Minnesota, licensed family child care provider. But I am also the president of the Minnesota Association of Child Care Professionals. We support required training for licensors, but the way HF 1459 is written, it will result in somewhat of what Holly said as well, an even more punitive oversight system for family child care providers. There is nothing in this required training about providers' rights, nothing about mentoring, nothing that will improve relationships between licensors and providers, things we desperately need to improve the current oversight system. The last thing we need right now is a less supportive and more punitive system pushing even more family child care providers to close their businesses. The legislature has a unique opportunity right now. You may help restore a child care oversight system that values and supports the providers, that sees value in mentoring as a form of improving child care and increasing options for families. Or you could choose to allow the Department of Human Services to continue the path they have taken for the past 6 years, in which providers have few rights and no due process, where licensors are encouraged to cite providers and discouraged from helping them succeed. Child care crisis will not be solved until we correct what was contributed to it in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? All right. And I am wondering, Representative Flanagan, would you be willing to work with those that have concerns to make, and I don't know what this other bill is, but to make it the best bill that it can be to appease everybody and address the concerns that they had of the rights and the mentoring and the relationships between the provider and the licensor?
Madam Chair, absolutely. I believe this it's clear that the spirit of the bill, that we have consistency with regards to the folks who came to testify on that point, and I'm happy to work with folks to make it an even better bill.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I trust that the providers that have issues will be in touch with the bill author then. All right, awesome. So anybody else have any further questions? All right. Well, then, Representative Flanagan, do you have anything closing besides what you just said?
That's it, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Awesome. Representative Flanagan renews her motion that House File 1459 be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails and a subcommittee report on House File 1459 will be prepared for the full committee. All right. We'll do a little switcheroo and come to the Branson show now.
Representative Franz, and I understand that you would like to do an overview of your bills and take testimony at this time before we move your bills.
Yeah, let's just do it all at one shot.
Go ahead, Representative Franz.
All right, thank you, Vice Chair Peterson. Yes, I'd like to present an overview of all six of my bills, House File 1299, 1300, 1301, 1329, 1422, and 1306. Following the overview, I invite child care providers and other members of the audience to come forward to testify. I believe many of the testifiers will speak to several of these bills, so a combined testimony is the most efficient use of our time this evening. I know that many of you have to travel back home and get back to work tomorrow and take care of child care kids. So many of the bills come from recommendations in the January report to the legislature by the Legislative Task
Task Force on Access to Affordable Child Care, and I was proud to be a co-chair of that task force this fall, or last fall, I should say now. The task force recommendations focused on three areas to open up access to child care in the state. That is regulations, affordability issues, and long-term discussions. I'd like to thank Vice Chair Peterson and Minority Leader Flanagan for bringing forward bills this year that help address access and affordability. I'd also like to thank the staff as well for the work that they have put into this committee. We could not do this without you, so thank you. We have heard bills about CCAP reforms, child care business training, new co-op child care business models, and addressing statewide uniformity and regularity. Regulatory enforcement, business regulatory enforcement through licensure training. And later, Representative Quam will present a bill that improves fairness and compliance measures through a new fix-it ticket that improves guidance to providers on minor issues rather than being issued an expensive correction order. Tonight, my bills will also build on improving fairness and compliance measures for child care providers. And as you know from presentations this year, child care providers are leaving the fields in drones. We have had a quiet crisis across Minnesota due to a child care provider shortage. This workforce shortage has started a ripple effect across the state as parents are desperate to find child care and businesses, especially in greater Minnesota, are unable to hire workers due to the lack of child care. It is quite a crisis, people. Some say that providers are leaving the field because of retirements. While this might be a part of the picture, it's not the whole picture. I have heard time and time again about the regulatory climate that is increasingly punitive. In my county alone, I was just informed on Friday that 11 providers are thinking about getting out of the field, and that is not good. While not always the case, many providers have said that monitoring visits have devolved from teaching opportunities and technical assistance for quality improvements to stressful encounters where licensors seek to search until something negative is found. Picture a licensor coming into your home and opening up every drawer and possibly getting written up because they find a pen because that child may poke their eye out, or going through drawers and finding a thing of aluminum and getting a correction order because that child may cut your finger on an aluminum thing of aluminum foil. So that is actually happening. Communication and transparency from DHS and county licensors to child care providers is also inconsistent and needs extensive improvement. Changes in law or new rule or policy interpretations are not always made clear prior to monitoring visits, nor are DHS or the counties always responsive to providers. In addition, many providers do not reach out and ask questions for fear they will be given a correction order as a result. I know these stories will ring true for Representatives Flanagan, Crescia, and Albright, who heard hours upon testimony from providers across the state last year as we toured to learn more about this issue. Simply put, we have to stop the shortage. If we don't have child care providers, people, it doesn't matter how much money is added to CCAP if we don't have the loving providers to care for those children. With House File 1299, I require that DHS communicate via electronic means about any changes to statute, rule, federal law, regulation, and policy related to child care providers. Currently, DHS communicates directly with the appropriate government agency for changes to each specific program or policy. However, that information is not always communicated with license holders. This can result in miscommunication or misinterpretation. This bill requires DHS to communicate directly with license holders so there will be less confusion, and it ensures license holders are receiving accurate, timely information about issues that impact them. This language will be worked out in an amendment before Health and Human Services reform to clarify that the intent of this bill is for child care programs, both center and licensed family child care, not all licensed programs. So we got a little work to do for the next committee. House File 1300 clarifies language about annual training. This was an issue we heard about in the task force. In my bill, classes that are to be taken annually would need to be completed once during each licensed year, and classes that are to be completed every 2 years would need to be taken before a relicensing visit at the end of a 2-year term, instead of 12 or 24 months from the date that class was last taken. This would protect providers from a violation if their class is canceled or unavailable the same month it was taken 1 or 2 years prior. I have an amendment tonight to clarify language, as some providers have 2-year license terms. House File 1301 allows child care providers who have correction orders overturned by appeal to remove the order from public posting. These orders are required to stay up for 2 years, even if they are overturned. Providers who work so hard to care for children feel the postings are scarlet letters that negatively affect their businesses. House File 1329 would prohibit quotas for the issuance of correction orders. We have heard anecdotal evidence that licensors will not leave a provider's home until something wrong is found. This simply cannot be allowed. House File 1422 will have DHS report on the status of child care for the next 3 years. The report will contain not only have summary data about trends related to child care providers, child care assistance funding, and the changes in rule, law, or policy, it will also require updates about work being done to remedy communication and relational issues between DHS or counties and providers. And finally, 1306 allows foster care parents who are also child care providers to receive CCAP for the child they foster and have in their child care. Many are operating at a significant loss due to these vulnerable children. I would direct members' attention to the packets with written testimony by a child care provider from Lake County who is experiencing this, and I have an amendment that would direct the CCAP funds only to licensed child care. Before I end, I know some providers here would like to speak to a bill I have in another committee, House File 1298. It would make an administrative law judge's decision regarding the license of a family child care or group family child care provider the final decision of the commissioner. Many providers do not think it's a fair process when their correction orders or negative actions are overturned by an administrative law judge, and then DHS steps in and overturns that decision. With that, I would like to invite anyone who wishes to testify on these bills to come forward.
Thank you, Representative Branson. And please make your way down to the testimony table and then just introduce yourself for the record, and you can continue with your presentation. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name again is Tracy Stingle, and I am a family child care provider from Mankato, Minnesota. And I'm here on behalf of Minnesota Association of Child Care Professionals, MACCP. I'm going to speak of a few of the bills that Mary Franson has spoke of, and I'm going to, in support of, HF 1299, which would require DHS to communicate directly with child care providers about changes that impact them. The current practices in DHS communicating regularly with counties about changes and expecting counties to relay these changes to license holders. Unfortunately, this is not done in many counties on a regular basis. In addition, many counties relay information secondhand, often results in inaccuracies as the licensors add their own expectations or interpretations of these changes. Like the game of telephone, providers have been on the tail end of the communication, yet are expected to adhere to any changes even when they are not told of them or are given inaccurate information about them. Providers and licensors should receive the same information at the same time so we know what is expected of us. One of the things in our own county is that we have like a spring and a fall newsletter. So anything that happens between in those 6 months, we never hear about until those newsletters come to us, and that's when we're told about the changes. We support HF 1300, which changes the definitions of annual and annually for training requirements. The expectation for annual classes used to be once during a 12-month licensing period. DHS has now changed that to expectation to within 12 months from when the class was last taken, which has resulted in an abundance of correction orders and violations for not taking required classes on time, even though they're taken once each year. One of the required classes are not, many of the required classes are not offered frequently enough, and sometimes classes are canceled last minute due to weather or low attendance, leaving providers out of compliance when no makeup classes are available before the 12-month time frame expires. This happens quite often in our area of Blue Earth County. We do not have the access to trainings as many people do up in the city area. Having a strict 12 or 24-month requirement does not allow enough flexibility to meet providers' needs in the current training environment. MACCP will be working to change all required trainings from every 12 or 24 months to this new definition of annual or biennial. MACCP also supports HF 1329, but would like to see some clarification. DHS already claims that there are no quotas, yet we've heard the number of providers from different counties that their licensors have reported being told that the training that's currently offered to them, that it's impossible for someone who's licensed for many years to not have any violations unless the licensor is not doing his or her job. If this is how our licensors are trained, how can they not feel pressured to find violations? There may not be a quota as in an exact number, but the expectation and pressure to find violations is there, and it's growing with each passing year. And I believe it's House File 1301. I think it got tapered on here. Providers should not have a violation hanging on their wall for 2 years because a parent forgot to sign a form or because the water temperature was 1 degree too warm. Fix-it tickets are the appropriate tool to bring providers into compliance for minor infractions that don't endanger the health and safety of children that can be easily fixed. We also support the second portion of HF 1301 if amended to remove the section giving DHS and county licensors the right to issue violations for items not discussed with the provider. If a potential violation is present, the provider should hear about it during the inspection and not receive a surprise violation in the mail days, weeks, or even months later. This notice should be given in writing right then and there. And that, I can testify to that as far as I had a situation where a child had been ill and wasn't able to receive a vaccine like the month prior to my licensure coming in, and it was missing there, and I stated that to her, and I still got the corrective action order almost a month later from the date of her visit. So I had no idea that that was coming. Knowing, I could have followed up with her and sent the fax, the paper to her, and it is still now sitting on my wall, and my next licensing is this July. Most of my parents laugh at it, but it's hard for me to see that when I open and close my door, because I'm not, when you want to be perfect, you know, those are the types of things that you have to deal with. And the other issue that we ran into is one of them was that we got a new water heater, and it was reading 2 degrees higher than what it was supposed to. We had had several plumbers, plus the person who installed it, who his wife was a child care provider, try to get that temperature rating right. And the only way to do it was to put on vacation, and we have a family of five, so 2 to 3 showers, and we were having cold showers in the morning. And so it took, you know, asking her, well, what's going to happen? How do I go from here? And she basically said, I don't know, fix it. And I'm like, okay, so are you writing me up? Because you'll write me up for years until I can figure something out. And she's like, I don't know what we're going to do until I get back to the office. So that was one of my personal situations that happened with me. There was no, like, rhyme or reason as to what could be done. And when we took it with our thermometer, it was right on, but her thermometer was 2 degrees higher. So that's also some of the issues we deal with.
Wow. So did you end up getting a...
Oh, sorry.
Hi.
No.
Hansen. So, Ms. Stengel, did you end up getting a correction order?
I actually did not, because my husband did get a little, like, doohickey toilet sweater thing and tubes, and I took a picture and I sent it to her, and I basically told her, because I was kind of, like, fit to be tied, because I was really upset with her at the point anyway, and I said, I will not receive a corrective action order for this. I have talked to several plumbers. We've had several people in and out of here. I've been to Lowe's. I've been to Home Depot. My husband's working on it. We had to get the water heater, like, within weeks. It was probably before she showed up. So it was probably 2 to 3 weeks in the time frame. And she did she did give me leeway to figure that part out, which is funny because that is more dangerous to children than not having a signature on my or a immunization record filled out, in a sense. So she swayed on that, but she gave me the corrective action order for the missing information on the immunization form, that the child couldn't get the immunization because he was sick.
I just have a quick question, too. I was just curious about the training requirements, and there's a lot of us that always have continuing education. I was just curious if you felt that the training requirements were they appropriate? Are they too much? Are you happy to do those types of requirements?
Some of the requirements are very repetitive, like SIDS, SUID. Those are all great trainings for very first-time providers, but to take it yearly sometimes is a little repetitive, and it doesn't change. There's not like new information coming out every year to give to us to teach us or whatever. There are trainings that are appropriate and great, but then again, now the trainings have gotten to be where they have to be specific trainings, and it has to be pretty much by the book, and you have to go by the thing. So it doesn't make the trainings interactive and fun anymore. It's pretty much, this is the slide, this is what you see, and you kind of go through the steps, and they can't veer off and talk about, like, just how I just told you about the situations I personally have had. Most trainers can't go into personal feelings or personal experiences that they've had, or the trainers aren't child care providers. They're trying to get more and more trainers that are not child care providers or have to have college degrees or college educations that don't bring that experience as to, I had a child that's a biter, what do I do? That was one of my first things my first few years. You know, I went to a training and I'm like, I have a biter. What do you do with a biter, you know? And those types of things where we were able to go through and talk about that, where someone who's a college professor or college is not going to be able to answer that stuff because they don't have experience in child care. Maybe their own child, but not in child care with that.
Thank you. Did you have any additional testimony with the other bills? I know you mentioned several of them, but did you have any other? I wasn't sure if you...
The only other one I have is for HF-604, and that's at the end, so I will save that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you
for providing the testimony and sharing your stories. We're happy to hear them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Julie Seidel, and I am here today, and I'm testifying on behalf of LCCPAC, which is the Licensed Family Child Care Providers of Anoka County, and I've also been a licensed provider for 14 years. I want to state at the beginning when we're talking about the loss of family child care, when I started child care in 2003, we had over 900 providers in Anoka County. As of 2017, we are just short of 530 licensed providers. So there's been a 50% drop in the 14 years that I have been doing child care. I'm constantly getting calls on a daily basis from upset parents looking for infant child care that cannot find care for their children, for after-school care. There's a real shortage out there, and I'm in a very heavy area. You know, Anoka County is not a small area. It's not out in the rural farmland, and we are having a lot of trouble in our county also. The first bill that I'd like to talk about it is the HF 1298 in regards to the law judge's ruling. Overriding the ruling of an administrative law judge is a clear violation of due process. It does not protect providers from the possibility of persecution from DHS or licensing for any number of reasons. It is necessary to have an independent, unbiased final decision in matters to eliminate the perception of harassment to providers. File 1299, this will help to ensure that all providers will receive any and all changes that will affect their business in a timely and accurate manner. That has not always been the case. I will say Anoka County has actually been pretty good about it, but I have a lot of friends throughout the state, and there's information that I receive that they don't receive, and that needs to be statewide. Every county needs to get that information to their providers. File 1300, this will alleviate the problem with providers in ensuring they are able to find a particular class within a 30-day window. This can be especially burdensome for providers in greater Minnesota areas where classes such as CPR, first aid, SIDS, and abusive head trauma and child development are not offered on a monthly basis. I just about got caught in this last year myself because I'm very busy down here at the legislature, and I had to have a CPR class by the end of March, and I had to drive an hour and 15 minutes to take a class in a different community to make sure I got that CPR class. Even in Anoka County, that we're in the cities, the five-county metro area, these classes are not offered on a monthly basis, so it does make it very difficult. We have lives, we have other things that we need to do, and if I would have missed that class, it would have been a correction order and a $200 fine. House File 1301, in reference to the fix-it tickets, I actually have my 15-year-old daughter here today, and I should have her come down and talk to you about what it's like to live in a family child care home. It's like walking on eggshells constantly. We're always worried about the things that we leave around, bobby pins, hairspray. You know, if she wants to curl her hair and she happens to pull the outlet plug off of her outlet and I've got a child in a room in a crib, I'm constantly on her back about that, and it's hard. And we are only human, we are the only people there, and we do the best job that we can. And to receive a $200 fine because an outlet plug was removed and not put it back in immediately, it's not okay. To leave a bobby pin sitting on a countertop, the children aren't playing in the bathroom. Yes, it is part of my home, but we supervise our kids. We don't let them just run amok throughout the entire house. So if you're finding a bobby pin on the bathroom countertop upstairs, it's not going to affect the children in my child care, but yet that bobby pin could cost me $200.
Excuse me, Ms. Seidel. Representative Franzen?
Ms. Seidel, could you talk about the little bit relationship that that does between you and your children?
Ms. Seidel?
When you're looking at a possible $200 fine?
It's tough. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be emotional, but she's 14 years old. You guys are parents. You know that's a very hard stage when they're becoming teenagers. And for me to be constantly on top of her on a daily basis, put this away, put that away, make sure this, it's tough. And I made her cry. It's just, it's really hard, and we shouldn't, our job should not adversely affect our family, and it does, and it not only affects her, it affects my husband, it affects the dog. You know, there was a big, and it, I know you laugh, but it's true, because there was, somebody had gotten a correction order because they were told that their dog's water dish was a body of water. The water dish for the dog, how ridiculous. You know, it's just the stress, the strain on me, on them, on your family. It's not okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to cry. No. I'm a crier, sorry.
Okay. You know, as a former child care provider, I totally relate, absolutely. My kids were younger, but it was that same old, same deal there, you know.
When they're little, it's their friends. Mm-hmm. And as they become older, they're not her friends. I mean, she loves the daycare kids, don't get me wrong, but they're not old enough to be her friends, so now it becomes more of a burden because as, you know, a girl with earrings and hairspray and bobby pins and all that stuff, now it's more of a hassle to have them in the house because she has to be so careful. And I'll admit, I've chewed her out big when she's left something laying around, because she's got to remember it could cost me my job. And what burden to put on a 14-year-old.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Seidel.
Where was I? House File 1306. The association is also in favor of this change. With the looming child care and foster care shortages, it is a financial burden on providers to hold spaces available within their child care for the possibility of children needing foster care. Allowing a foster child to stay within that foster home for child care is also a more stable environment for that child during a very stressful time in their life. House File 1329 is, we are, of course, 100% for that in prohibiting correction order quotas. You know, this whole, what we've all been talking about, when they come into your home, it's a nail-biting situation where you walk around waiting for them to find something wrong. It shouldn't be that way. Our licensors are supposed to be there to support us. And again, I will say I've had some very supportive licensors in Anoka County. I've been very fortunate. But it shouldn't be that way. They need to be there for support, not, it's
it's almost like the evil witch hunt. They're in your home and they're hunting for something. You know they're going to find something. And when you leave, when they leave, everybody goes to Facebook and posts, oh my God, my relicensing visit was over, no correction orders. It's this huge relief. It shouldn't be that way. When they knock on our door, it shouldn't be the panic of, oh my gosh, did, you know, I put that outlet cover back in because we were downstairs playing music, or, you know, is the infant in their crib and did they take their socks off? Because believe it or not, you can get a correction order when an infant takes the socks off and leaves them in their crib. Exactly.
Wow.
I had a child who has eczema extremely bad as an infant. I was not allowed to leave socks on his hands while he slept so he would not scratch and open up his skin because it was not part of his outfit. And I really got lost in telling stories, so I'm really sorry, but I think that's the end of it. We're just, you know, as providers, these issues have been plaguing family child care for many years. They are a huge reason that people are not coming into child care and a huge reason that we have providers leaving. We have providers in Anoka that have 25, 30, 40 years of child care, and they're leaving not because they are ready to retire, because they can't handle it anymore. They can't handle the stress from licensing. Thank you for your time.
So, Ms. Sadell, a quick question. So, can you conclude then the daycare provider shortage may be due to regulation?
Definitely. It's due to regulation. It's due to over-regulation of things that really don't have anything to do with the safety and welfare of children. Like Tracy was stating, we go over our paperwork several times, and to be missing a signature or one immunization on a form and it's a correction order and a fine, I find that ridiculous. It has nothing to do with the safety and the welfare of the children. I do understand a bobby pin on my floor in my playroom would be hazardous to the children, but that same bobby pin on the countertop in the bathroom, upstairs, I'm on a four-level split, has nothing to do with the safety and the welfare of the children on the third level of my home. So it definitely has a lot to do with it. It's not fun living in a home walking on eggshells constantly.
Thank you. And then one other quick question. Can you take these classes online?
Some of them that you can, but the CPR and first aid, because you have to test out, you cannot take that class online. So that's where I got caught last year. I do most of my education online, but I got caught with that CPR class. You have to go and you have to test out in front of somebody.
Representative Flanagan.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Seidel, can you just tell me briefly, I've forgotten how often you have to get recertified for the CPR?
CPR is every 2 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you for your testimony. Welcome back to the committee, and if you wouldn't mind seeing your name again for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, my name is Holly Sable, and I'm a family child care provider in St. Michael. I'm also a trainer, so I can speak to some of those training requirements, too, although you'd be happy to know that trainers are now not allowed to say anything potentially negative about trainings, about MNCPD, about the developed system, about parent aware. So I might have to recuse myself if there are any questions that could be potentially considered that way, which is really unfortunate and seems to violate First Amendment rights, but hey. I absolutely love working with children every day. I am so blessed to have a job that every day is a fun new adventure. But the overregulation, the excessive burdens, the crazy amount of paperwork, the liability, the vilification of our profession, all those things seem to consume more time than the time we are spending with the children. And Facebook, whereas, you know, I want it to be a place where you can share great activities, and yeah, we did foam blocks with shaving cream today, it was so much fun, instead it's providers saying, oh, I was just told, you know, the dog water dish thing, and, you know, it's a body of water, and anyone with half of an IQ point would know that a body of water, by definition, does not mean a dog water bowl, but... And I took, I think, some committee members on the task force, I think, I don't know if the picture was shared, where I took my dog's water dish and put caution, open water, and warning, no lifeguard on duty, and posted it on Facebook as a joke, because that's what it's come to. And you have to laugh at these things sometimes, or you'll go insane. But I really appreciate the Let's Do This legislation that you've presented. I think it would do a lot to help our profession, and I think it will reverse the trend that we have of providers leaving this profession in droves. And it's not because we're not making enough money. It's not because we don't love what we do. It is solely because of the things that are happening to us. And you have an opportunity to fix that. Providers are often the last to know about changes to rules, laws, and interpretations. This has caused many providers to receive these surprise correction orders, even for ridiculous interpretations of the rules. So that's why I support House File 1299. It would prevent a lot of the confusion and the seemingly adversarial relationship that we have with DHS and with some licensors. And I would like to say that I adore my licensor, Becky Damian in Wright County. Phenomenal. Love her. But I hear all the time from providers across the state who contact me because they're scared because their licensor said this or that, and I contact licensors a lot because they're scared to make waves, and this is your livelihood, this is your business, and if you wear the wrong color on your licensing visit, it might send your licensor might give you a correction order. House File 1300 would streamline the tracking of our trainings so that providers wouldn't have to, you know, right now we have so many different trainings that we have to take. We have to take active supervision every single year. We have to take suicide abuse of head trauma every other year. And in the off years, you have to watch a video. You have to take child development behavior guidance training every single year. You have to take, if you're a new provider, supervising for safety. You have to take CPR and first aid every 2 years, in addition to 16 hours annually of trainings. And so, you have so many different dates. So I took this one in October last year, so I have to finish that one before of October this year. Oh, but the other one was a November date, and it's easy. I'm very organized, but, you know, it's a lot of dates to keep track of. So this would streamline it, so you just say, okay, my licensing date is September 1st. By August 31st each year, I'm going to need to meet them. I support the fix-it ticket portion of House File 1311, because it allows for efficient and safe improvements in family child care homes without wasting providers or licensors time and without vilifying providers through public correction orders. And I also support the proposed amendment to it as well. It would save DHS licensors and providers both time and money. I think we all can support that. I also would want them to be required to have those notifications in writing. I know House File 1508 does have a written notification requirement. I support any efforts to improve transparency, clarity, streamline processes, and adopt the Task Force on Child Care Accessibility and Affordability recommendations. That's why I support House File 1422. And then House File 1298, thank you for allowing us to discuss it tonight. I had the unfortunate experience of having a family, a mom, accuse me of hurting her child 11 weeks after she was out of my care. The family was divorced, and I don't know the reasons for it, but there was no thorough investigation whatsoever. The county interviewed the mother first with the child next to her, then they interviewed the child with the mother next to her, never interviewed the live-in boyfriend, never interviewed the father, had to pay, it cost me $12,000. Which, you know, that's chump change for a family child care provider, right? And had to pay that out of my own pocket. And the administrative law judge, in an 11-page decision, which I have here and I've redacted it, but said that what this investigation lacked was thoroughness. He criticized the county on many levels, criticized the state. They didn't record appropriate. They didn't record all the interviews. It was just a poorly done investigation. Yet, even though the administrative law judge gave many reasons why he decided that my revocation of my license needed to be reversed and I needed to be put in back in good standing, DHS had, I believe, 90 days to decide, yeah, we agree or disagree with this judge, even though, I mean, it just violates my right to due process. And so I really hope that House File 1298 would pass because the administrative law judge's rulings should be final and binding. DHS should not be able to say, yeah, well, we know better than a judge who's listened to all the facts and is neutral. So if anyone has questions about, I can, you know, share this. But it would be really unfair for a provider to have to go through all that and think that justice will be served and then to have to wait 90 days only to find out, sorry, too bad. So I really thank you for your time and for consideration of these bills.
Thank you, Ms. Seville.
Thank you.
No.
Oh, Penny, don't fight over it.
Welcome. Please state your name for this.
Cindy Cunningham, family child care provider in St. Paul. I'm going to try to go through and just give the brief parts of what I have on these since you've heard the testimony. My overview of the issue with licensing is that it is a disjointed system. We have a state, we have legislators write the bills, give it to the state, state gives it to the county, and there is no way that the state knows and understands what's happening in the counties unless providers are the ones that come forward and say, excuse me, this is wrong, an appeal or a correction order, or going to administrative judge process to get it overturned. And I did have the opportunity in 2015 to work with DHS directly in Ramsey County, and we were able to get a lot of things changed in that process, and so we've got a whole different system, but not completely. And again, DHS really doesn't know what our specific county licensors are writing for correction orders or how things are happening unless we ask for an appeal. So it puts it in a really awkward position in that. I worked with Representative Franson a couple years ago to try to get the administrative law judges, ruling final. I know and could refer just specifically just three providers in Ramsey County, one who had applied. There was a process in the background check. The administrative judge ruled in her favor. DHS denied a license. There's one more provider that is no longer in the business. I know of a provider who appealed, won, you'd think, and DHS decided to still withhold their license even though the administrative judge ruled in their favor. Another provider, and I had used this one a couple years ago, had an 11-page condemning accusations and negative actions. Administrative judge, it's a one-page, I didn't know we were talking about this one tonight, so I read it, 11 pages, bad, and she actually got hers reversed. So there's one page, one word reversed, but it didn't make it go away. DHS decided to give her a conditional license. So it happens in our parent aware and our resource and referral networks when people are looking for us. What they will look at first is the condemnation. Is all of those pages of wrong and of bad, one word of reversed isn't going to override that. It stays on the DHS lookup, which is for a whole other bill and talking. That stays there for anyone and everyone, and I joke, in China or anywhere, to be able to go on our personal records and see what we were accused of. It can stay, even though we were technically proven innocent and okay with this, but all of that stays on there depending on what DHS says. This needs to change. Providers don't even want to go through the process. They just close the doors and go out. So if you want to know one of the reasons why people are out of the business or not in the business, this is a specific reason why. Okay, so 1299, let's get right in here. Currently we're not getting anything from DHS. I've had direct conversations. I have to figure out which pool we're talking in here. I have been directly told that there's no money in DHS to be able to notify us. I said, you know, we can always opt out. If I sign up for anything, I can say, do I want it printed? Okay, you could create a small amount of people that need it imprinted. It could go by electronic means where we're notified. My county has said, well, DHS gives you that information. I said, no, they don't. DHS expects the county to give us the information. The counties expect DHS to get the information. I work specifically on trying to figure out the positive support rule and also on the poisonous plant situation that was going on. We got clarification from DHS. It's on the DHS website, but nobody knows it's there unless they know me or the couple other people that had it, because only a couple counties actually notified their providers that there was a ruling on those things. So that it needs to be there. We need to have that communication directly. As far as the annual training, a complexity in it also is that, say I take my training in July 1 year, I have, at this point, we're being expected to take it by the end of July for the next year. If I am thinking ahead, okay, I can't get it in July, I'm going to take it in May or June, then the next year after that, then I have to take it in May and June again. And every year bumps it up, potentially, if I'm being proactive to get my trainings done. And if my license is in April 1st, which it is for me, and this great training comes or a good trainer comes by in September, then I'm really going to be messed up on when my training is and when it should be. With that, yes, the online is there, and many people are going, oh, gosh, 2 weeks, I got to get online and do it. And my question then is, how quality is that training? What did actually going through that process of, I like the online trainings, I do them, I'm doing them right now. But if I'm doing it just to get my training done, what is the quality in that? And we need to be able to do face-to-face when we have those opportunities, not just be limited, though I'm really glad we have the online support. Correction order posting. I always like to hold my beautiful yellow piece of paper. So, and I've shown this on a task force before. 2 years ago, my licensing's next week, I was given 5 correction orders, 2 sheets of paper. Right, so all 5 are on 2 sheets of paper. The licensor did not know the law. I did. I appealed. And this is what I got then, because 4 out of the 5 were overturned. So I have page and page and page of what the overturned statement is. This is what I still have to have on my wall. So it's this, if it's not overturned, whatever, we'll do it. I still don't like it. I still don't think it's beneficial. But if it's overturned, number one, this shouldn't have to be on my wall, and all of them shouldn't have to be posted just because they can't rewrite what was upheld.
One moment, Ms. Cunningham. Representative Franzen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cindy, what does that do for your self-esteem, knowing that you have this yellow piece of paper up, everything's been overturned, and yet if a parent asks you, why do you have that, what does that do to you? How does that affect your self-esteem as a business owner?
Ms. Cunningham.
Madam Chair and Committee, you know, I'm a little spunky, so it doesn't do a whole lot. But, so if you ask me directly, my parents looked at this and all that. Same thing as another provider said. The parents that we have in our care go seriously. We know what this is. Providers look at this, though, as, oh, my gosh, I'm not doing my job well. Any one of you, anybody who would want to have their employee file put up on the wall for whoever walked into your cube or your office about what's wrong, is that seriously how wrong it is? So it either hits us or it becomes unimportant and minimized with it. There are many providers who have said, if I get any correction orders, I'm closing, because they feel like they put their heart and soul in. They feel like they're working hard with it, and why should I have to live with this on my wall? I think part of it also is when we interview a family, and this is where the online lookup, again, for another discussion, becomes a real problem. DHS, as a side, is my understanding, is proposing that these go on the online web lookup. So not only would negative actions be on, but all of these correction orders would be on. It took 10 months for me to get a ruling on my correction orders, and DHS would tell you multiple phone calls, before they would even make a ruling on it. That's the part that really bothered me, is I don't like posting it. It's not necessary, but every new family that walks in, I have to say, and I have these correction orders over here, and this is what they are, and this is what they mean, and all of a sudden, parents don't understand that, don't know that. They do not understand. So if the federal block grant process is to help parents, you're going to lose providers. And if it's going to take me 10 months to try to figure out, this would have stayed on my record. This is a long answer, sorry. This would have stayed on my record on the internet lookup or on my wall again for 10 months before I was proven to be right and not in the wrong. The licensor was in the wrong. I don't think there's anything that happened negatively to her for writing up me. It's just me and my business. I know providers, and to go back to administrative judge, I know more for the negative actions. They can't get clients because it's when they go through a parent provider search, and there's the dings next to it, and there's these things, and parents are going to go, never mind, not even going to go there. It's a hot potato, without even understanding that it was a hot water heater that was 1 degree off, or, you know, whatever some of these other ones are. I also want to say, you know, I think there's rules. There needs to be rules for people who don't know how to handle things or how to do it. We need to be held accountable. This is not helpful to anybody. So it kind of makes me mad, I guess. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Pixit ticket for speaking to 1311, as far as the exit process, the exit interview, however we want to call it, after the visit, in Ramsey County, again, that was one of the things that ended up getting implemented through the process that we worked with DHS. Because what was happening was the correctioners weren't coming out and action wasn't being taken for up to 6 months before anybody would even know, and then all of a sudden you would get a notice. And so what has been in general, and not my office, but in general what's happening in Ramsey County is that the licensor has to say, okay, these are the things that you're either going to get a correction order on or I need to go back and verify and check the law, which I respect and would prefer them to do, and discuss and check with DHS about whether this truly is a violation or not, but this is a concern to me. They've started that. I understand some of the other concerns about it being verbal. However, at least this would be an improvement and would be a requirement for the county licensors to communicate anything to us and where we can have some understanding before we just get these lovely pieces of paper with it. As far as the fix-it ticket, I never quite know for sure what it is because partly in Ramsey County we ran into real big problems because then the licensor can be, then it's up to the licensor, well, is this a fix-it ticket? Is it not a fix-it ticket? Is it going to be? Is it not? There could be some potential too much ambiguity in it, so I have a concern of it based on that. However, we just had a meeting a few weeks ago, and the direct question was asked of our county licensing unit, if a provider calls and says, I don't know if I'm complying with the law. Can you come out and look to see if my gates are right or my whatever is right? Can you come out and do that? And they said, yes. Okay, so if it's wrong, what happens? We have to write you up a correction order. And that was 2 weeks ago. So I'm like, ugh. So, you know, there has to be a way for us to be able to get help and assistance and minor mistakes. We're not out here to endanger people. Providers who can't do this job shouldn't be doing this job. I'm 100% that with that. However, if we're doing good intent and good process and good try, asking for help and doing things, this process is not helpful for anybody, and it is causing providers to go out of business.
Thank you. Thank you. And I know we had another. There we go. Well, thank you, and welcome to the committee, and thank you all for taking the time to be here tonight. We appreciate it very much. And so state your name for the record and begin with your testimony, please.
Elizabeth Bingard, owner and director of Here We Grow Early Childhood Center in Mankato. I'll just quickly reference this slideshow presentation. I'm not going to go through it because I know that we're short on time, but I waited until now to do it because I wanted to hear what was being discussed this legislative session, but there are things that I'm hopeful that can happen between now and the next session, working towards licensing guidelines. One of the barriers that I list in here is updates to the legislative guidelines. House File 1299, which I am in support of, because as everyone else here has already suggested, it's very hard to know what licensing changes are made, and then to follow through and follow up with them in a timely manner. Also, the correction order posting requirements, because we as child care centers also have to hang those up, and it has to be in an area that parents can see, which means it's in your front entryway, so that's the first thing parents see when they come in. The quotas for child care licensing, I also appreciate that as well, because I've heard from other centers that I do consulting with that they have been informed of quotas. And then also the status report to the legislature, House File 1422, in support of that as well. Other things that are in here are things that I have gathered from other states that I'm hopeful in the future we can use to better help parents and providers understand the responsibilities, but ultimately bring everyone together. I feel like someone had used the word villainization, and I think that's true on all fronts. I understand licensors have a job. Part of me does feel, hopefully no one shuns me for saying this, a little bit bad for them, because I think everyone's villainized and everyone's been pitted against each other. I reluctantly will say this, but I will.
I provided testimony the first Wednesday here about child care assistance payments, and I received a letter from the county because I did not, in a timely manner, return a gal's phone call from one of the counties that I work with, who essentially said, please do not go above my head, do not talk to legislators about me, I prefer that you come to me. Why would I go to you? You didn't help me the first time. So it was a very rude 1.5-page letter that I'm not sure what I'm going to do with. Perhaps put it in my shredder, but I feel like I might need it in the future. But I think we need to all come together. That's kind of my mantra. There's an African proverb that says if you want to go far, go. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And we're not together right now. So thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any further testifiers? Welcome to the committee, and just state your name for the record, and you can proceed with your testimony.
Excuse me, Tiger. I wasn't planning on testifying. I'm Kim Leopold. I represent Association of Minnesota Family Child Care Licensors, so I'm one of the bad guys. First of all, I want to say that we are in support of HF 1299, relaying the information, any changes from DHS, any licensing changes directly to the provider. I can say I've worked in two different counties, and we do it very different. We've done it very differently in both counties. One, very good, we do a quarterly newsletter, and we're also doing email blasts. The other one, I'm in that county currently. The other one, I'm surprised that things are the way they are in that county. I also think that, I mean, just to let everyone know too, we always don't get the information timely. There is this chain that goes through the Child Care Aware, that goes through Develop, that goes through Parent Aware, all these places that we don't often get them ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely, we feel the frustration that the providers feel. I will say that I am not aware of any quotas, so I support there not being any quotas. I know that the people on the board and myself, we look at what we do as working together to provide safe care for children. That's what we think. I'm speaking for AMFCCL. In support of rescinded correction orders not being posted, to be quite honest, I was never aware that it was happening. It does not happen where I work or with my providers that I work with, because if it's rescinded, it doesn't exist. A couple other things. I think we would be in support of foster care and child care, you know, receiving the funds and being able to stay in the same home. As far as the HF 1301, the fix-it tickets items got discussed at visits, I think we understand that, but I do agree that it could get confusing with what is considered a correction order, because DHS would tell us that anything that's not in compliance is a correction order. And unfortunately or fortunately, I think the electronic checklist that is coming, I think this summer, as part of the block grant, will make us all more consistent, and I'm not sure if that's going to be for the better. Our choices when we go out will be in compliance, not in compliance, and we get to kind of leave one of them blank to check later. And if we check not in compliance, it generates a correction order on the spot. So we can't, we have to, you know, so again, is it a fix-it? Is it not in compliance? It doesn't give us a lot of wiggle room either. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Any other testifiers that would like to come down? Okay. Well, Representative Franzen, or anybody else? Okay. Representative Franzen, so shall we proceed, I guess, in moving House File 1299? All right. So Representative Franzen moves House File 1299 to be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. And we have the bill before us. And Representative Franzen, to your bill.
We've already gone over everything.
Okay, so, well, I wasn't sure. We didn't do it. We didn't move any of these, so do you want to add any other comments to it?
Mm-mm.
I did that already in my presentation. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Or any other questions from members? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Say no. Motion prevails, and you're on your way to the next committee on that. And so are you saying that you moved every single bill, or I think we have to procedurally go through every bill. So,
but I don't have anything to add on them.
Okay, so then we'll move House File 1300 to be recommended and approved to the Committee on Health and Human Services before, and I understand that there's an A1 amendment. And so do you have any discussions on the author's amendment to the bill?
No.
And any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the amendment is adopted to your bill. And I presume you don't have much to add?
I have nothing to add. I'm just going to move right along.
So we will, Representative Franzen will renew her motion that House Bill 1300, as amended, be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Say no. Motion prevails. And the subcommittee report on House File 1300, as amended, will be prepared for the full committee. So House File 1301, Representative Francis, move the bills be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. Any questions? Representative Franzen?
Bell vote yes.
All right. So Representative Franzen renews her motion to recommend to the Committee on Health and Human Services before House File 1301. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Say no. Motion prevails, and I'll be prepared for the full committee. House File 1329, Representative Franzen moves that House File 1329 be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. Any questions, members? Representative Franzen?
I will vote yes.
Okay. Representative Franzen renews her motion that House File 1329 be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion prevails, and you're off to be prepared for the next full committee. House File 1422, Representative moves the bill be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. Any member questions? And Representative Franzen renews her motion that House File 1422 be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Okay, so now we have another tricky one. House File 1301 has an A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Oh, 1306, my apologies. So, correction, House File 1306. And so the motion is to adopt the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. All right, so House File 1306 as amended, Representative Franzen.
Madam Chair, regarding 1306, I was actually, I'm very glad that actually the department did not come down here and blast that bill. They were in my office, and there's some issues with that bill, so we may not get too far with it this year, although I still think it's a really great policy. I do have the assurance from the department that we'll continue working on that summer if need be during the interim.
Very well. Any member questions?
It's a little bigger and more complicated than what I really thought it was.
Okay. Is there anybody who wishes to speak to this bill for or against?
Did you want to come down? No? Oh, you don't have to.
All right, well, we have the understanding, Representative Friends, and we'll continue to work with DHS on this bill, but for now we're going to move it out of this committee, and Representative Friends will renew her motion that House File 1306, as amended, be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion prevails, and we'll be prepared for the full committee. And then I believe, Representative Franzen, you're done, and you can come back and resume your seat here, and we'll have Representative Kwam talk about House File 1311.
Good evening, Representative Quorum. The bill we have before us for consideration is House File 1311, and Representative Quorum moves the bill be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. And I do understand the A1 amendment is an author's amendment to the amendment, Representative Quorum.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The amendment is just to clarifying that a fix-a ticket will not be made public on a public website, and it takes care of some renumbering. And I think we heard some testimony on that earlier, and I'd like to have the bill put into appropriate form with this amendment.
All right. Is there any discussion to the amendment, members? All right. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. We do have the bill before us, Representative Quam, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm somewhat familiar with this because over the years I've attended some of the organization meetings and training meetings for the providers in Olmsted and Dodge County. Olmsted, for a while, some years back, had what was called speedy notes. And so they'd come out and visit, and there'd be minor little things. There'd be a conversation, a discussion, and they would mark down something that was very minor, could be taken care of right at that time or within a couple days. And that's sort of a similar to what the bill is intended for. Non-life-threatening, non-hazardous minor things such as, you've got liquid soap in your first aid kit. Well, you take it out and you're fine. Or if you need a degree or two adjusted, or maybe your thermometer reads different than their thermometer on the hot water temperature. Well, little things to address. So that is the intent of the bill, is to foster cooperative effort between the people that come out into the daycare providers and have a discussion right then and there of, there are the minor little things, so there's not a big surprise. And if you work together and talk and have a conversation, you have that partnership, and I think that does good for all parties. So I noticed somebody appeared to my right.
Yes.
It might be appropriate for her to speak.
All right. Ms. Blumberg, if you want to go ahead and please state your name and association with the record, please.
My name is Ariane Blumberg, and I am a family child care provider in Olmsted County. I am the chair of our advocacy committee for FCCI. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am Ariane Blumberg, a 20-year family child care provider and chair of our advocacy committee for FCCI in Olmsted County. I'm here to testify on House File Bill 1311, the Fix-It Ticket and an Exit Interview. A Fix-It Ticket would be issued for minor infraction that does not immediately endanger the health, safety, rights of the person served by the program. It's an alternative to a correction order in certain circumstances. A few minor infractions would be missignature on paperwork, a child under the age of 3 not having a dentist listed on the admissions paperwork, items, 2+2 furnace, missing soap form first aid kit, hot water temperature degrees within a few degrees. Under current guidelines, minor infractions result in a correction order, which are posted in our homes for 2 years. Under the new federal block grant regulations, correction orders will now be required to be posted for 3 years on a public website for everyone's view. We have asked that the fixed ticket infractions are not posted on the public website. Under this proposed legislation, a licensor has the ability to issue the license holder a fix-it ticket, and the license holder would agree to fix the issue within 48 hours and submit documentation of the correction to the licensor. If the license holder does not fix the issue within 48 hours and show documentation to the licensor under the current time frame, it would result in a correction order. I compare a fix-it ticket to a fix-it ticket issued by law enforcement. An officer pulls a driver over for equipment violation, such as a headlight out or taillight out. The officer issues a fix-it ticket to the operator, and the operator has 14 days to fix it. The second bill I would like to discuss is the exit interview. This requires county licensors to offer providers an exit interview upon completion of a licensing inspection before leaving the provider's home. Providers will be made aware of the correction orders or potential correction orders at this time and offer technical assistance on how to come into compliance. We view this as the same as an employer-employee review. At the end of the review, the employee is aware if they are not meeting the standards of their job performance. The family child care provider can choose to opt out of the exit interview. We believe these bills are needed, welcomed, and are a fair change for all parties involved, including the children, the parents, the providers, and the county licensors. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blumberg. Is there any questions from the members here for Ms. Blumberg? Oh, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with the 48 hours, what if they get the fix-it ticket on Friday afternoon? Would it be 48 hours business days, or?
That is our recommendation, 48 hours, you know, two business days.
All right. Any other questions? Okay. Is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify? All right. Ms. Engel? Ms. Stengel, if you want to please state your name again for the record.
My name is Tracy Stengel, and I'm a licensed family child care provider for Mankato and the president of MACCP. I just wanted to state that, again, with MACCP, we support this House File 1311. One of the things that did come to mind, though, as we've been listening to testimony and then with this, was if we are going to get the iPad technology, which is going to put them to where it's compliance, non-compliance, a fix-it ticket might not be something that's on the iPad. So it's something that we would have to also consider into this bill, I would think, coming up in the future, because that wouldn't be something they could later say, oh, well, we'll just not mark this compliant, non-compliant, and wait until the 48 hours and then mark it. I'm just throwing that out there just because that was something that hit home to me when, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name was speaking, Cam was speaking, so, and then when this came up as well. And one of the things that rings true for me is when we were walking through, and I, at the time, had a very understanding licensor, we walked through the house and there was a plug out, and it was sitting on the counter next to the plug-in that it belonged to, because of course, just like Julie, I have teenagers, and you know, I was able to just pick up that plug and put it in while she was standing right there. My licensor currently, I would bet to money that she would not allow that, and it would have been a written up situation for me. So, and that's, again, what we deal with is that from county to county, licensor to licensor. In our county, we have two different licensors. And so when we're talking about things, when we go to my association and we go to trainings and things come up, one of the things is that, well, who's your licensor? Which one is yours? And if someone says Carol, then they're like, oh, she's not mine, so I won't have to worry about that because Joanne doesn't care, or whatever the case may be. So that's, we're always like, oh, well, who's your licensor? Because she didn't do that to me or whatever, and that's the situation that we are faced with. That's it. Just that we support it.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. Is there anyone else, Representative Albright? Did you have a question?
I do, for the author. So, Representative Quam, and I'm looking at the section that pertains to the exit interview, and I'm just wondering, in light of the timing for this hearing being in the evening, in an effort to give the providers themselves an opportunity to testify, I'm just wondering if there's been thought given to, understandably, that most of these inspections would have occurrence during the course of the day. When would the exit interview take place?
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before the inspector leaves.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kwan, do we, in a sense, create a bit of a conundrum then if a child care provider is taking care of children and yet has to sit down and maybe obligate themselves from taking their time away from the children to complete the exit interview if it's during the daytime?
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Albright, no more of a conundrum than having an inspection at whatever time it is.
Madam Chair and Representative Kwong, do you, it talks to an exit interview, is that oral in nature only or is it written documentation that the interview has been completed or a waiver of that interview?
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that could be some details we could work on as it hits the next committee to try and detail that out if we didn't trust the department to write rules for implementation. We would probably want to have it specified in extreme detail in the statute, or you could allow some department rule making for the implementation. That would be up to the next committee that this bill would approach since we're past the amendment deadline, and it doesn't appear to be a simple oral technical amendment being suggested.
Madam Chair, and for the author of the bill, I think the consistency or the continuity of that exit interview would be paramount to all the providers that I've heard yet tonight, and so I would just want to make sure that everyone is receiving the same in terms of a consistency in terms of that exit interview or the opportunity, so it's not 5 minutes and you're gone, nor is it an hour and a half languishing as you go through everything that you've got other things to go on. So I would certainly rely upon the providers for input on that as well to make sure that they're realizing pertinent information back from that interview. So but I certainly support the initiative that Representative Kwong's put forward.
Thank you, Representative Albright. All right. Is there anybody else in the wishes to testify? Anybody? All right.
Elizabeth Langert, here we grow. I'm just wondering if we could also have this for child care centers. That's my only question, because we would also appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you. I think that there's some talk about that too, Ms. Banger. Thank you. All right. So, Representative Kwong, do you have anything to add to your bill?
Members and Madam Chair, there have been some discussions about maybe some tweaks, verb tense and other suggestions from the department and agency, and we'll continue to have discussions once some suggestive language comes forward. But the intent is Olmsted County had done some of this, and it worked very well. And I think that if we can bring this system in, we can gain a team atmosphere between all the parties involved to make sure that we have wonderful daycare, we have safe daycare, and that the providers are fully aware of the best practices. And I hope for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kwong. That reminds me of one of my favorite Reading Rainbow songs. Teamwork makes it happen. Teamwork, working together. And I think we need a little bit more teamwork between the county, DHS, and family child care providers. All right, so Representative Kwong renews his motion that House File 1311, as amended, be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and a subcommittee report on House File 1311, as amended, will be prepared for the full committee. All right, the bill we have for consideration now, Representative Kwong, is House File 604. And Representative Kwong moves the bill be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. We have the bill before us. Representative Kwong, to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You may have heard throughout the testimony a little bit of a thread of anxiety among providers And part of that anxiety is they are independent business people. They, a lot of them are running their business out of their home, and they've got their family, they've got children, and they don't see that they should be considered employees of the state just for the purposes of possible unionization. There's an executive order. One of my constituents challenged that in court and won. There was legislation passed, and a vote was done to organize, and by about a 3-to-1 margin, that was rejected. In order to remove that anxiety and possible further, I don't know if annoyance is the appropriate word, there were some activities in past years that some providers were concerned about during the attempted organization process. And so basically, this is a simple bill to say we're not going to have this cloud over their head. They don't have to be worrying about it.
Okay.
And I'm sure there'll be energetic discourse. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Do we have any testifiers to House File 604?
Look at us all jumping up. Again, good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tracy Stengel, licensed family child care provider for Mankato and president of MACCP. We wholeheartedly support HF 604, and this to us is a no-brainer. This should not be controversial. When this was passed in 2013, despite the overwhelming opposition of providers, we were told it was simply giving providers the option to choose for themselves through a vote. The vote happened, and providers clearly and concisely voted no, 1,014 to 392. It wasn't even close. This victory, however, came at a cost. Providers sent mailings and had to take time from work to call eligible voters. We should not be forced to bear the cost of yet another election, and providers have spoken, and now it's time for legislature to respect our choice. When this went through, my representative came out. I asked her to come out and talk to me, and she stated she was overwhelmingly told in our area that, well, she didn't say in our area at the time, she said she had emails to support this bill, to repeal the one that we are asking to be repealed. And I continued to contact her and go through things. And later on, she had contacted me later on, probably after it was passed, like a week later, and stated that she had so many emails from the cities asking her to support that bill. And I said, but you're my representative, you're our representative, and I know it's not something Blue Earth County wants, being active in the association. She said, well, this is what I got in my emails. This is what I received. If we want to talk about losing providers, having this threat of unionization over our heads, every time I go to an association meeting, once a month, September through May, and being the legislative representative there, the first thing asked every meeting is, do I need to know if I'm going to retire yet? Is the union a threat yet? Have you heard anything? Are they coming towards our doors again? Should I be putting my sign on my door stating no soliciting or no union? This alone, if this continues to be a threat to us, you will lose providers. There are several providers in our county or in our associations. We have 70. I would say there's a 15 to 20 ratio that have been providers for 25 to 30 years. And they have said that if it ever went through or if the threat continues, they will quit. They will not be a part of this anymore. Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record, Ms. Seville.
Hey, I'm Holly Sable again, family child care provider in St. Michael.
And I was one of the people who testified many times against this bill, and I think it was Senate File 778, and I can't remember the House file number, but they were terrible. And I was one of the plaintiffs in the lawsuits against them. And it's been a 12-year fight to defend our independent small businesses from the threat of forced unionization. I know I and others have spent tens of thousands of dollars individually as providers and spent thousands of dollars of time mailing providers, making phone calls, going to doors, speaking at meetings, traveling hours to give correct information to providers and empowering them. And we'd like, you know, despite the fact that there was a stacked election where very few providers got to vote, all the odds were against us, and yet we still, you know, overwhelmingly showed that we were opposed to being forced to unionize. And so we would like this bill to remove that threat to our businesses so that we don't have to worry about someone pushing themselves into our backyards when we're supposed to be taking care of children, for someone banging on our doors during lunchtime, putting their foot in the door to keep us from closing it, and pushing in and wasting an hour and a half of your time trying to convince you to sign a card that is, quote, just for more information. It's caused us stress and frustration as union organizers have interrupted the care of our own children, and taken time from our own families. So, you know, we're not anyone's employees. We are employers. And this bill should have never been passed or signed in the first place. And so this is just righting a wrong that should have been taken care of in 2013. So, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Julie Seidel. I am the legislative representative for LCCPAC, and we are unanimously in support of the Hands Off Child Care Act. We have been fighting this battle of unionization for years, and it has been shot down at every turn by providers. Family child care providers do not want to be unionized. Please put an end to this once and for all. When you cast your vote for this bill, consider the vote last March where licensed family child care providers voted 3-1 against unionization. Now I'm going to talk for myself. You can thank the union, I guess, for the crier being up here, because this is what started me doing the legislative work. It's demeaning that the union people feel that they will give us more of a professional manner to our business, that they think we need help running our business. I'm very successful. I was a single mother for quite a few years with my daughter on 3.5 acres with horses, dogs, cats, and took care of everything. I don't need to pay somebody to basically claim they're my babysitter and to tell me how to do my job and to run my business. To listen to the union organizers last year when we tried to repeal this then, stating how this was like when women got the right to vote. This is not no way similar to women getting the right to vote. This is the union being intrusive on a predominantly female field and thinking that somehow we need their help. They're not here to help us. They're here to collect money. And I don't know if you've realized that, but over the last years, the unionization in the private sector has dropped to 5%. The steel workers are having problems paying their employees that are retiring. And the truckers union just dropped people's retirement from over $3,000 a month to $1,300 a month. And those are guys that have been trucking for 30-plus years. We don't want them. We don't need them. Please get the monkey off our back. Thank you.
Okay. Cindy Cunningham, family child care provider in St. Paul. This is so complex. The vote was resoundingly turned over. When we had these discussions and this bill went through, the first problem with the whole thing was that it changed our employment status. If I was an employee someplace, I respect unions, I respect the presence of unions, I respect the process of the unions. The problem in this whole thing just basically is I am not an employee. That is the part that bothered me the most about the first part of the bill. CCAP is a family benefit. It is not my benefit. Yes, I do receive the paycheck, but it is the family that applies. I don't get to go recruit families that are on CCAP. I have had families on CCAP. I would take more families on CCAP, but I can't go put a bulletin board out and say, openings for families with CCAP. I can't predict when they're going to leave my care. It is not the same kind of employer-employee relationship of anywhere else. I have no control or influence even over how I or who I provide care to. One of the things when we've talked about the diminished numbers of child care providers, and if you look at the statistics of providers who are providing care to families on CCAP, it is at 213. 2012-2013, when these actions of unionization came to child care providers, is when the dramatic number of child care providers went down. People quit providing care. We're not going to hassle this. We're not going to do it. And if again, if you look at the number of providers willing to provide care for CCAP families, dynamic reduction at that point in time, because that is the connection to the unionization part of it. The other part was they aligned us the same as unlicensed providers. You've heard enough tonight, and you've heard enough through the task force and through everywhere else. We are not in the same ballgame. We are not the same environment. CCAP families in unlicensed care is not the same process or need for support, representation, or anything else with that part. I live in Ramsey County. Ramsey County is where the large number of the primary union organizers are at. I can tell you story after story of misrepresentation, of tweaking things, but I can also tell you that they have, those particular organizers received money from Ramsey County to provide services to providers in Ramsey County. And I thought, okay, well, you know, that's an opportunity. I don't like it. I don't like the tax money's there. But you think if they're getting an additional money to do the job that they're saying they're going to do for all of us, something would come. Nothing has come. The meetings, the situations that these organizers put on are for those who are only supportive for the union. The mailings only go out to those who are union members, and it goes to family. It does not go to all providers. So I've seen them in direct action in my county and how a union would act. I have spent, has it been 12 years? I have spent a lot of time and effort and education. We're isolated business owners, and many people, you've heard the situations we have with licensed business, I'm glad you're here. We have numbers of people who come into our homes, and it's like, okay, which side are we on? What are we doing? And I'm watching children. That's the environment that union organizers are coming in. And they're not family child care union organizers. They are people that were shipped and brought in from other places. And maybe the union worked well in their industry. They would say things and had nothing to do with our industries. So to continue to think and to try to educate providers, to be on the guard, to be educated, to be knowing what it is that a union does and doesn't do for us is exhausting. The vote has gone. And the caveat would be everyone who has spoken to you tonight and all the legislation and the work predominantly of any proactive change for providers in Minnesota in the legislative process has been done by providers, not by anyone who would even begin to start talking about being representative of the union. So I think we have shown that we have a voice, we have a good process, the vote's been taken, it's been defeated. It's not our industry, we are not employees, of the state. The families have that benefit. So please, I'd like to do other things with my time than talk about union with other providers. So thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other testifiers? All right, please state your name for the record.
My name is Melissa Donovan. I'm a licensed child care provider in Chisago County. I am the owner-operator of Helping Hands Child Care, and I've actually never done this in front of the committee. I have been a child care provider for about 11 and a half years, and I own a very successful child care. And I've actually mentored about five different providers to start their own successful child care within the county, within the city that I live in, within Lindstrom. I completely support this bill. We don't need the unions to come in and tell me how to run my business. It was hard when they came into my town. I
was actually feeding lunch, and luckily my husband was there. I had, you know, all these kids, trying to make lunch for all these kids, and the news came. Two gentlemen actually came to my door. And being a woman, having gentlemen come to my door when I have children, children are my main concern, and having these gentlemen come to my door asking me all these questions, it was kind of tough. It was a little bit concerning, but luckily my husband was home that day, and I had him talk to them. And he was able to kind of get them to leave, and I didn't sign anything that day, but I didn't want them in my home, and I didn't sign that paper telling me that I wanted more information, and I definitely didn't want the union trying to come into my home to tell me how to run my business. And I definitely do support FH 604, and I just wanted to let you know that. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, and for your first time testifying, you did a fabulous job.
Sorry, thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone else from the audience that wishes to testify? All right. Do we have any questions from members? Representative Flanagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my understanding that the law authorizing child care providers to certify a union will sunset on June 30th of 2017. Is that your understanding as well, Representative Kwong?
Representative Kwong.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions? All right. Representative Kwong, do you have any further discussion to your bill?
I think you heard from many very competent small business owners on the bill that are actually involved, and I don't think I could do a better job.
All right. Sometimes our testimony is the best. Representative Kwan renews his motion that House File 604 be approved and recommended to the Committee on Health and Human Services Reform. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and a subcommittee report on House File 604 will be prepared for the full committee. I want to thank each and every one of you tonight for being here. We will continue our work in Health and Human Services Reform Committee this year and our subcommittee discussions for policy reforms over the interim. Our work is not done. It has just started, and I am so thankful for each and every one of you who have participated in this topic. It's extremely important, and it has gained quite a bit of attention in the state of Minnesota recently. Child care, everyone is talking about it, from city council members, county commissioners, business owners, parents themselves, and we've got a lot of work ahead of us, and I'm just so excited for the future of child care. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.